Support comes from USC Online, providing exceptional online graduate programs, certificates, and upskilling for current and aspiring professionals. Explore your graduate options today with the University of Southern California at online.usc.edu.
This is Greater LA, KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Commemoration by Black Lives Matter at LA City Hall today for George Floyd, murdered on this day last year by Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin. A commemoration today and a rally. Stay in the streets is the theme of the rally today as activists press for more action on defunding police and transforming the criminal justice system. KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb is there, and he joins me now with this report. Hi, Benjamin.
Hello, Steve.
Where are you right now, and what's the mood like?
Well, right now, Steve, we are standing in Alvera Street. Protesters just marched from the Kenneth Hahn Hall of Administration, of course, where the LA County Board of Supervisors is meeting today. And as you mentioned earlier today, activists were outside of LAPD headquarters and outside of City Hall. And the mood, I would say, is optimistic, but also there's a collective sense that more needs to be done, that the verdict in the George Floyd case, his murder case, is not enough, and more activism needs to take place, as you mentioned, on the streets. I caught up with Dr. Chastity Jennings Nunez, and she told me she's in it for the long haul.
This is a movement, not a moment. It requires all of us to stay focused, to stay dedicated to continuing to make change, because it's not going to happen overnight. And even if it does, there are many forces out there who don't want it to continue.
And she's speaking about what she sees as the inability of local government to really take the recommendations of groups like Black Lives Matter to heart and actualize them. Now, Jennings Nunez also brought her goddaughter with her today, Angela Robles, and I asked her why she decided to get up this morning and march in downtown Los Angeles.
At least for me, I've noticed that it's not only like a simple, oh, we did it once and it's over. It's more like we have to continue to fight, because if we don't, we're just not going to be heard. We're not going to be listened to. It's just like a constant struggle. So that's pretty much why I'm here today.
In other words, Steve, there's no sign of these types of movements, these types of protests letting up anytime soon in Los Angeles.
Well, I want to talk about, you know, because we hear the word work, right? And this continues, the movement, not a moment, a movement. Are there specific calls, Benjamin, for action?
There absolutely are. And they're really echoing calls that we've heard throughout the past year, right? You've got specific calls from organizations like the People's Budget LA. They have an entire plan to reimagine city spending in general. And a big part of that is diverting money from the police. And that's attractive to many folks out here, including Carson Marlboro, who I met this morning.
Law enforcement officers not over-criminalizing, over-policing our communities, not, you know, going out of their way to arrest, harm, beat, abuse our people. In addition to that, I think in terms of our local governments, justice would mean taking funds that are typically put into law enforcement strategies that have not proven to keep us safe, and instead investing into community services, mental health programs, and other things that we can do to prevent crime.
So using tax dollars, money from taxpayers, and actually spending them in a different way, a reimagining of the city budget. A lot of folks who are out here today are asking for that, among many other things.
Benjamin, over the last year, we've seen other social justice movements link up with Black Lives Matter. Did you see any of that today downtown?
Well, it's a really good question, Steve, and I actually did. So that's part of a trend we're seeing across the country, not just here in Los Angeles. But today, there is a growing link in the city here between the movement for Palestinian rights and also the movement for Black Lives. Actually, for the first time that I've seen during the course of my coverage of the movement for Black Lives here in Los Angeles, I saw actually an organizer for the Palestinian youth movement, Ibrahim Yunez, called up and able to address the crowd that was there for the Black Lives Matter rally, and listen to what he had to say.
When we stand against police brutality here in the U.S., we are standing against police brutality worldwide, including in Palestine, where the Israeli police exchanges counterintelligence and training with U.S. police departments, including the LAPD.
And Steve, this is the first time I may have seen it this year, but it's not unprecedented, this link between the Black Lives Matter movement or the Black Power movement and the movements for liberation in Palestine. You got to remember back to the 1960s and 70s, the Black Power movement and many of its activists were very much in line with what was happening in Palestine. They saw them as kind of having the same struggle. Kindred people of color was the phrase. And we're seeing a lot of this intersectionality online as well, with Zoom events on social media. Now, that's not to say, Steve, that all Black leaders and activists in the U.S. see this issue the same way, but there's certainly a trend emerging, and it's worth noting and watching as it develops here in Los Angeles.
KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb. Benjamin, thank you.
Anytime, Steve.
From the streets of L.A. to the streets of Minneapolis we go.
Like many people, when I saw the footage, I was hurt, angry, and though I didn't know what I could do, I knew I needed to do something. So I grabbed my camera, packed a bag, and booked a one-way flight to Minneapolis.
That's Farron Kidd from Orange County. He's an entrepreneur. He's also a filmmaker. He spent 3 days documenting the protests in Minnesota last year, the chaotic moments, the come together, and the outsiders who were actually there to disrupt. And then he returned to OC to help organize at home. His documentary is called Bang for Change, and he joins us now from Minneapolis. He tried to find a quiet space to talk to us because he's dropping that that documentary in Minnesota. Hey, Farron, congratulations on getting it done.
Yeah, thank you very much. We're very excited about it and excited to share it with the world.
It seems like you put, I mean, just watching the documentary, that you put a lot of heart and soul into it. You're back there in Minneapolis now. Do things look different now than they did a year ago? Does it feel different?
Oh, yes, night and day, you know. So obviously it was a very difficult time for Minneapolis, a very angry time, a very pain-filled time. But on this day, I definitely feel the power of optimism from the activists and the community leaders who are doing this work, who have been doing this work. And I think that as opposed to mourning, you know, on the original day, on the anniversary, it's not just about the mourning, but it's about, hey, you know, what can we do to stay motivated to get the necessary changes that we want to see?
I mean, your film focuses on that messiness, right? In the first few days after what happened to George Floyd. I mean, it seems like the differences in opinion and I guess the strategies among activists, you could feel it on the street. And you focus on one woman named Ashley Paulson. Let's hear from her real fast.
The ones that's out here with us isn't going to put us further in jeopardy. That's what I would say. If you out here with us, well, they got guns pointed at the men that's standing out here, Black men dying senselessly, you're not going to do no shit to provoke them. Well, they got ARs pointed at our head.
So tell us about Ashley and what she's talking about in that clip.
Yeah, so it was essentially, those were the early conversations that I heard from Ashley. You know, immediately when I got out there, you know, there's many people, you know, yelling and chanting slogans that have become very popular, you know, no justice, no peace, say his name, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But really what stood out to me about her was the fact that she was aggressively holding allies, people who may have been well-intentioned, may have been there to support the cause, but who were acting in ways that, especially as non-Black people, that would become counterproductive to the movement. So you did see a lot of people who were breaking stuff, people who were burning stuff. And she was letting them know that, hey, the privilege of your non-Black skin is going to allow you in this moment to do that and get away with it. But at the end of the day, it's going to be Black men who are held accountable for the destruction that you're causing. You're assisting and destroying the positivity of this movement and its credibility.
And she used that word, by the way, positivity, right? Positive. We want a positive protest. Your film ends back in Santa Ana. There's this really powerful moment of your friend TZ, who's speaking at a rally outside. You're also there with Jonathan Hernandez, city councilman from Santa Ana. You spent time with TZ behind bars earlier in your life, and he talks about the violence that's inflicted upon people's communities. And I wanna play a clip from TZ. Let's hear that.
In front of everybody to see, I'm gonna take a knee and vow never to hurt another Black man or anybody of any other race, whether it be brown, white, whatever. And I'm gonna take a knee.
Tell us about your history with the police and the justice system. I mean, how'd you go from, you served some time behind bars, and then now you're this community activist really trying to foment change. How did you get from one place to the other?
So I always tell people, you know, the worst thing that happened to me is the best thing that ever happened to me. I've lived in areas in Orange County during, you know, significant portions of my upbringing that were pretty rough. And I was a victim of violence. And to protect myself from that violence, I became a perpetuator of that violence. You know, oftentimes when you live in communities that are inflicted by violence, you can't call law enforcement to come protect you from that violence because you'll in turn become, you'll be inviting more violence. So you really only have the ability to conform and adapt or try to figure a way out. And obviously when you're a youngster, there's not a lot of opportunities or a lot of way out. So it becomes very understandable why many men of color, especially black men, young black boys, begin participating in violence and gangs and criminal behavior. But in any case, going to the penitentiary was the first time that I had, you know, access to significantly older black men, men who had grown up in similar conditions to myself and who had sat in prisons and penitentiaries for long enough periods of time to really process through the things that made them criminal and really heal themselves from those elements. And in turn, they became some of my greatest mentors and counselors. They became the father that I didn't have growing up. You know, they became the big brothers that I didn't have growing up. And they became the positive big homies I wish I would have had growing up. And TZ is a young man who I mentored in there. You know, when he was in there, he's about 20 years old. At the time, I was about 31 years old. And I seen the goodness in him. I seen that he had a good head on his shoulders. And I tried to help, you know, steer him in a positive direction. And it was important for him at that time to not only, you know, hold officers accountable for the violence that they inflict upon, you know, communities of color, but to expand that conversation to, you know, something that is equally, if not more important in certain respects, and that's acknowledging the fact that we're inflicting violence upon ourselves. And so he took a stand at that moment to say, I'll no longer contribute to violence against humanity, especially, you know, black men, but by extension, all people in general. And I support that 100%.
And I think all of this seems to center, Farron, to me anyway, and just having been a journalist for so many years, on hopelessness, that there's just not a whole lot of hope, right? Like when you were a kid, you didn't see a lot of hope, right? And I wonder, you're doing a lot of work through this collective called Black OC that you created after you got out. Tell us about that and what you're doing through Black OC moving forward, and what, you know, if there was a young Farron listening to this right now, who's, you know, 10, 12, 15 years old and has that hopelessness, what do you say to that guy?
Yeah, so, you know, Farron had a lot of passions. He was talented, but he traded a lot of those talents and a lot of those passions because, you know, he let the greater, you know, black culture that we glorified, especially at that time. You know, I grew up through the 90s, you know, gang culture. You know, dictate that it wasn't cool to be smart. You know, it wasn't cool, you know, to play sports. It wasn't cool to, you know, want to break dance. It wasn't cool to ride a skateboard, that it was cool to be in a gang, that it was cool to, you know, be quick to violence, that it was cool to be uneducated. I would say none of those things are gangster. You know, being gangster, you got to be intelligent. You know, being gangster is not about being violent, but it is about learning how to, you know, stand up for what's right. So yes, we do need to learn how to protect ourselves, but we need to know when is the appropriate time to protect ourselves. But beyond that, as far as Black OC, the unique thing about growing up Black in Orange County is that you're not having a traditional Black experience in the sense that you're not growing up in predominantly Black neighborhoods. You're either gonna grow up in a predominantly Latino neighborhood or a predominantly white neighborhood. And I've grown up in both. And the strange thing is when you grow up in a Latino neighborhood, they're very similar to black neighborhoods in the sense that they're struggling with poverty. They struggle with gangs and crime and violence, all things that come from poverty. They're struggling with identity issues and all those things. So it's peripherally the exact same condition as black communities. But when you're growing up as a black man in a predominantly brown community that struggles with all those things, your community is starkly aware of the fact that you are black. And by virtue of the fact that it was in the 90s in Southern California during a time when there was a lot of racial gang warfare between black and Mexican people, I was targeted simply by virtue of the fact that I was black by my brown peers, my Latino peers. And to compound that, you know, being very aware of the fact that you are black, but not having a black community to directly attach yourself to becomes a very lonely experience. So coming home from prison and creating Black OC, I'm attempting to create an organization, a movement, a culture, and in the near future, an actual physical space that can become a hub for positive Black culture. That the youth who are growing up like I were growing up, a space where they can come to and they can see reflections of themselves. And in that respect, they can develop a Black Orange County cultural identity that can possibly become a positive example for other Black communities all across this nation.
Oh, man, that's some powerful stuff. Farron Kidd, whose new documentary is out called Bang for Change, really hits home. Farron, I want to thank you for taking time out and talking to us today.
Thank you guys very much for honoring me with this time and opportunity to share my story. Justice for George.
Well, continued coverage of the commemoration, the death of George Floyd, a year ago today, continues on Greater LA in just a moment. But first, I want to remind you that KCRW's Drive for the Future does wrap up today. We are asking you to give now. Your donation could unlock another 50 grand. So if we hit that 50,000 with your donation for KCRW, well, we'll double it. So if you give, say, $100, that becomes $200, thanks to our anonymous KCRW champions on this final day of KCRW's Drive to the Future. It is not easy, obviously, making a show like this every day, getting the newsmakers and the reporters, identifying the idiosyncrasies of a major metropolitan area. Help us finance the high-quality coverage that you expect from KCRW. And here's how you do it. KCRW.com/give. KCRW.com/give. You can also call toll-free at 800-600-KCRW. The last day of the Drive to the Future, and your chance now to get in before the end and support KCRW. One of our partners, by the way, that we're also supporting in the community is an organization called Heart of Los Angeles. A part of your contribution goes to what's known as OLA. They provide after-school services, academics, arts, athletics, wellness programs for LA's underserved youth. OLA provides those services free to those who qualify. Your donation supports college scholarships and those afternoon programs for LA's underserved youth. KCRW.com/give. And thank you so much for your continued support of Greater LA and of KCRW.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Okay, moving on now with Greater LA on KCRW. Black-owned businesses saw a wave of customers following the murder of George Floyd and, of course, the protests sparked by his death. People wanted to put their money where their mouths were by supporting their neighbors of color. 1 year later, is that still the case? James Fugate is the co-owner of SO1 Books. It's a bookshop in Leimert Park, which specializes in titles about race and books written by Black authors. And James is with us right now. Hey there.
Hi, how are you, Steve?
I'm doing well. Thank you for being with us. I know your bookstore has been around for decades, for at least 30 years, right?
Yes. We have been in Leimert Park for now for 13 or 14 years, and we've done well the last, you know, since we stabilized after we moved there. We almost thought we would close at that time. But since then, we've done well, and, you know, certainly having books like President Obama's book, The First Lady, her book, and just a lot of other books in just the last few years have really, really helped us. But nothing like what happened after the murder of George Floyd.
Describe what business was like following those protests.
You know, that very first week of June when we were allowed to reopen, we don't know exactly what happened. Some people say that Ibrahim Kahindi, who had the book How to Be an Anti-Racist, started talking about the idea of people not shopping with Amazon and some of the big box stores and supporting local stores. And they even said he mentioned our name on a national show, and we were flooded.
Wow.
And it was just incredibly busy. I mean, like nothing we had ever seen. You know, it was just hard to watch that video. And I think black bookstores all over the city of L.A., in the country, they saw a tremendous upswing because people said, wait a minute, enough. We do want to support these type of stores because we've been doing it for a long time.
I want to do sort of a, and I hate to call it a speed round, but that's exactly what it is, because I want to pick your brain a little bit about some books.
Sure.
Because that's what you do.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And you know, you mentioned the book, How to Be an Anti-Racist.
Oh, yeah.
That a lot of folks are coming to buy.
Yeah.
If you wanted to continue to do anti-racism work, right? I mean, this is something, I mean, it's the heart and soul of becoming better human beings.
Yes.
What would you read? What would you reach out for?
You know, the one of the books I really like, and I at first I thought, oh, here we go with another anthology. 400 Souls, though, by A Community History of African Americans, also edited by Ibrahim Kendi and Kanisha Blaine, is an excellent book, and I'm so glad I looked at it, because it's new essays, it's new collected essays, and it's just a very, very good book. And it's 400 Souls by Ibrahim Kendi.
400 Souls.
Yes.
I've also been hearing about this book called Rich Thanks to Racism. This is Jim Freeman.
Rich Thanks to Racism is a disturbing book because people are profiting off of racism.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of times the discussion that we end up hearing about on some of the major cable networks are the topics that make people outraged. But we need to talk about other topics like business ownership and employing people. And you just don't hear about that enough. You don't hear about those stories enough. And this book, Rich Thanks to Racism, talks about how it's perpetual news cycle that repeats the same things over and over. And it's usually the most outrageous racial thing that you can imagine. And then those ratings go up and they make money. And it's a disturbing book.
Well, speaking of things that seem to happen over and over again, I mean, we've seen the brutalization of black people by police, at the hands of police. And you know, we saw it last year. We've seen it many times just since the murder of George Floyd. We saw it in 1992 in the beating of Rodney King.
Yes.
Right here in Los Angeles. Were you here in that year?
We were over on La Brea at the time. We did not close throughout that whole 4 or 5 days. I remember calling publishers and telling them, you know, this has affected sales and we might need a little help in the next month or so with paying bills, because sales were so badly down. You know, there's a new book that deals with that too, America on Fire by Elizabeth Hinton. That's a book that deals a lot with black rebellions and black and police violence. One of the reasons why I would say America on Fire and Rich Thanks to Racism go together is because these riots result from the constant call and publicity that some of these horrible things get. And so people don't know that there is a different way of thinking about how you live, and that, you know, challenging the police is not going to end well most of the time. And then these riots and civil disobedience, they don't help our community. They burn down the businesses in the community and push people out. There are places in Watts right now that you can go that are like deserts. There are very few big box stores down there and other places. And we need to have those stores to employ people in the community and give a sense of self-worth to the community. We need coffee shops. We need more bookstores. We need a lot of businesses there. But instead, we have not had the reinvestment in our communities, and we really, really need those type of problems. So I think her book really points out the frustration that will build when people are not served. She's also a good friend of the store, so we love her.
Well, you sure have stuck through it. I mean, in many years, the digitization of books and people reading things online and buying things online. But you're still here, James. And by the way, just today, you found out that the trade magazine Publishers Weekly named you guys Bookstore of the Year. How about that?
Yes, it's absolutely the most amazing honor, especially for someone like me. I've been reading Publishers Weekly for about 50 years now, and it's hard to believe that our store was given this great honor.
Congratulations to y'all, and thanks for being on today. We do appreciate it.
Oh, I'm so glad you called and had me on. Thank you.
James Fugate, the co-owner of SL1 Books in Leimert Park. By the way, check it out the next time you're in the neighborhood there. That's all the time we have for today. Tomorrow, a program that takes the low points and helps them rise with art, with music, with creativity. That's tomorrow. We're in the final throes of KCRW's Drive to the Future, by the way. It wraps tonight. Help us get past the finish line. When you need local coverage, be it the civil unrest seeking civil rights, news about COVID, news out of City Hall, homelessness, KCRW is there for you. Donate today at kcrw.com/give, kcrw.com/give, or toll-free 800-600-5279. And thank you so much. Catherine Barnes, Nihar Patel, Sonia Geis, PJ Shahamat, Ray Guarna, Amy Ta, Mario Saavedra, Phil Richards, Lorenzo Ponce de Leon, and Christian Bordahl all had hands on this show this evening. I'm Steve Chiotakis, thanking you for your ears and for your time. Have a great night.